What's going on, everybody? It is Ricky LeBlue, the Virginia Tech football beat writer for TechSideline.com. Welcome back to another episode of the TSL podcast. We took a one-week hiatus last week because there were some snow issues here in the NRV. I know that Will and Chris, who you guys both drive rear-wheel drive cars, correct?
Yeah.
And it did not work out well for either of you, did it?
At this point, I've just figured out, don't even try.
So basically what you're saying is you need to get another car that
for
has,
the winter.
That has some all-wheel drive and just have two cars.
Yeah, maybe. That's
that's not going to be a problem for
it's
you,
It's not
right?
a problem. You can just work for home, you know?
Yeah, my problem is that live up in a neighborhood where the roads are private, and they just didn't get
plowed.
I always say paved. I don't know why I do.
All right, so let's go ahead and move on into the meat of this podcast, and we're going to start with Virginia Tech's win over North Carolina on Monday night. This was really a huge win for this team, really just in terms of the season, because things were not looking good after that Florida State game. Tech beats number 10 UNC 80-69. Chris, you were there covering the game for TSL. Will, you were in the stands for this game. That's the best this team's looked since when?
Oh, since the last season at some point, I would say.
The best they've looked against good competition.
The best they've looked,
the second half of the Iowa game was pretty good.
It was. And there's really only two times this year this team has played good defense against good competition.
Yeah.
And that was the second half of the Iowa game, and then the entire game last night against North Carolina.
It really seemed like North Carolina was frustrated offensively all night long. Outside of Luke May and Joel Berry, UNC went 8 of 28 from the field, which is 28.5%.
Right. And even
that's not very good.
Berry had a good shooting night, but he also had, I think, 5 or 6 turnovers. And some of the shots he missed was just really bad shot selection. And I thought Tech's defense really frustrated UNC. They didn't get a lot of clean looks all night. And
UNC shot under 43% from the field for the night. And they shot 32.3% from three.
Yeah. And, you know, Bibbs said after the Florida State game that I asked if he was concerned or worried about the 2-4 start. He said he's not really concerned or worried. That's not what he's feeling, but he was feeling a sense of urgency. And they played like they had a sense of urgency.
They did. They really did.
Last night. Roy Williams said that. He said that Buzz had his guys really ready to play last night.
There was at no point when I was watching the game last night on TV where I felt like UNC was the better team.
No.
From start to finish, I felt like UNC looked sluggish, looked disinterested, and it really showed in the second half when Tech just really kind of slowly pushed them away and pushed them away and
UNC
pushed them away.
UNC does not look physically like they used to look. I mean, your teams with your Tyler Hansbrough's,
Bryce
and guys
Johnson.
Like Bryce Johnson's. I mean, there were guys playing for UNC last night that, you know, they don't look the part wearing UNC uniforms. Virginia Tech physically was as or more impressive than UNC last night, just when you get off the bus, so to speak.
Luke May is their best player, and
yes,
he was a 3-star recruit. And
right,
in basketball recruiting terms, a 3-star recruit is
right
like a 2-star recruit in football.
Right, sure. For your Power 5 teams.
You know, and he's limited. I think he's skilled, and he knows how to use his body to clear out.
Yeah.
You know, he's not particularly athletic, and I thought he was going to eat Tech up. He goes out and scores 10 points in the first 6 minutes, and it looked that way, you know. And
he had
a couple threes. Yeah, and at one point it was 30-24 UNC, and it looked like this was going to play out like Tech's other recent losses, where they get out-rebounded, they're not making enough shots, and, you know, then they just went on a run. They went on a 15-2 run to close out the half. And to the point of UNC not looking like they were the better team, I think the only reason they stayed in it at all once the second half started was that Tech missed a lot of open shots early
in the second half. They really did.
That kept UNC in it.
Yeah, you're right. And it was a 7-point deficit for UNC at halftime. And then you look up on the clock, UNC made a 3 at the 9:59 mark of the second half, and that made it a 7-point deficit again. So they had gone 10 minutes with Virginia Tech missing wide open shot after wide open shot, and could not cut into the deficit at all.
Couldn't close the gap. Yeah. They had that one little run where I guess it was Barry, that made 2 3-pointers
in
a row.
Yeah.
And I felt good the whole time about Virginia Tech winning, But at the same time, I was thinking the only way Tech's going to lose this is if they just continue to try to give it away by not making shots. And
yeah.
Then you get down. After I went home last night, I watched the broadcast. I just hung out on the boards and watched the entire broadcast. And with about 5 minutes left to go, I think it was Sean McDonough said, you know, Roy Williams has this look about him that he knows it's just not their night.
Yeah, I remember that comment. Yeah.
And Billis basically said, yeah, they just don't have it tonight. They're getting outworked, out-hustled, outplayed, and Tech opened it up. Shortly after that, Tech opened it up to 80-64.
Really quick, can we talk about how good of a play-by-play guy Sean McDonough is?
You know, that broadcast last night was outstanding. I've watched...
Outside of the halftime show, which didn't show any highlights, and I actually tweeted about that last night where they were talking about UVA winning the ACC, which is fine because that's irrelevant, and then they wanted to talk about Trae Young in Oklahoma.
Yeah, the Trae Young hype machine was a
zero highlights from that first half, none. Yeah.
And the Trae Young hype machine even went on and on and on while they were doing the
Tech. Yeah, and the hype UNC train is still starting to fall apart at this point because people are realizing that really his usage rate is kind of ridiculous. And,
yeah, but that's not going to stop ESPN.
Fair enough.
But so anyway, I've watched a lot of Tech basketball on television and I've even, you know, watched some UVA games like when UNC, I can't remember who it was UVA was playing recently. It may have been UNC, and it was the same day as a Tech basketball game, and I wandered into Campus Emporium, and there's a free sponsor plug. I wandered into Campus Emporium, and they had the game on, and I walked into Campus Emporium, and the first thing I heard was Dick Vitale's voice. You know, and so to listen to McDonough and Jay Billis do the game was a pleasure. There was a little bit too much teasing about being bald and that sort of thing.
Buzz's hair, yeah, and then Buzz's wardrobe change.
But it was generally pretty clever banner instead of the dumb stuff.
Buzz got his own camera there for about 4 minutes.
Yeah, no, I got a kick out of that. About to watch Buzz run it.
I haven't watched the broadcast from last night, but you know, McDonough has always called some of the great Virginia Tech moments.
Yeah,
the past,
it seems like he has. Yeah,
I think the Nebraska game with Tyrod Taylor.
Oh, yep, that was McDonough.
So funny you should bring that up because I think the first Virginia Tech game McDonough ever did was the 1990 football game between Tech and UVA. UVA had been ranked number one at one point in the season. They were starting to fall apart, and Tech beat them 38-13. And I clearly remember Sean McDonough doing that game because the one call I remember was Tech had a tight end back then named Greg Daniels, number 85, and he was probably more the Bucky Hodges type of his day. He was a better receiver than a blocker, and Tech sent him downfield, and Will Fuhrer hit him with a 40-yard touchdown pass that Daniels just laid out in the end zone. And I remember Sean McDonough and that Sean McDonough voice going,
yeah,
ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba, great catch by the tight end, Greg Daniels, you know. I can't do a Sean McDonough impersonation, but
McDonough's pretty unique in his voice.
You know, I during the Tech-Kentucky game, I went to the bar to watch that game, so I didn't have to listen to Dick Vitale. It's awful. And it's embarrassing to ESPN that they would put somebody like that on television. I know Dick Vitale knows basketball. The guy used to be the head coach of the Pistons, for goodness sakes, right?
Hey, Detroit Pistons.
Right.
And it's the same thing with Lou Holtz.
Right.
Lou Holtz can be smart and call a good football game, but no, he's got to be a clown in the booth.
Right.
You know, he's not as bad as Dick Vitale or even Bill Walton, you know.
Right? You know who's getting up there but is still really good on the broadcast in basketball?
Who's that?
Hubie Brown.
Yeah.
I really enjoy listening to him talk about a game because nobody breaks it down better than Hubie Brown, in my opinion. He's always been really good at it. And he's another guy kind of like Vitale, former coach, longtime broadcaster, but he still does a really good job of breaking that stuff down. But one of the big things from this game that I thought, and I know Chris, you're working on an article about this, was Kerry Blackshear stayed out of foul trouble all night. Mm-hmm. He had one personal foul. He played 33 minutes, 16 points, and 5 boards. To me... And we've all talked about it, and Chris, you kind of brought this to our attention, that not only is Blackshear Tech's most valuable player in terms of him being the only real big on the roster, but he's their best player in terms of his player efficiency.
Player efficiency rate, he's number one. There's another stat, I forget the name of it, floor impact counter, I think.
Yeah,
I think that's it. And he's by far the best player on the team with Justin Robertson coming in second in that one. I think Ahmed Hill came in second in the PER. But yeah, if you look at Blackshear against Kentucky, Kentucky outscored Virginia Tech by 14 points in the 22 minutes Blackshear wasn't, or excuse me, in the 18 minutes Blackshear wasn't on the court. In the 22 minutes he was on the court, Virginia Tech outscored Kentucky by 7. The Syracuse game, you know, he only played 13 minutes in that game. In those 13 minutes, Virginia Tech outscored Syracuse by 3. In the 27 minutes he was not on the court, Syracuse outscored Virginia Tech by 15.
That's a big difference.
You saw early in the Florida State game, early in the second half, that was a 3-point game at halftime. And Blackshear picks up his second foul early in the second half, within the first minute. Florida State goes on a 7-2 run, or 7-3 run. They bring him back in. He picks up his third foul, so they take him out. And then Florida State goes on a 7-2 run. So they extend their lead from 3 points to double digits early in the second half when he gets into foul trouble. I mean, it's just a completely different team. And I actually feel kind of bad for him because some of these fouls he's getting called for are just kind of ridiculous.
Yeah.
And he also has a propensity to foul early in the second half. There's six games that I looked at. St. Louis, Ole Miss, Kentucky, Syracuse, Florida State, and Wake Forest are the games he's gotten in foul trouble. Either gotten in foul trouble or fouled out completely.
Yeah.
And in every single one of those games, he had at least one foul called on him within the first minute of the second half.
And even last night, UNC, I remember watching Florida State. I think it was Florida State where the second half started and they went right after
first
Blackshear.
Play, May is on the inside.
They threw it
goes
to Luke
up for a shot, and I'm like, oh, God, they're going to call a foul on Blackshear, and it's going to go all downhill.
Now, one thing I did see last night, some of the conversation on the boards, and I agree with this, is that the refs let them play last
night.
They
did.
And I have seen Blackshear get called for the armbar foul on defense where he puts his arm out in the offensive player's back. I saw him do that last night, and they did not call it. And honestly, I know this is homerism, but I think a lot of the stuff that gets called against Blackshear is Mickey Mouse. Mm-hmm. But last night, they didn't call Mickey Mouse stuff on him.
Yeah.
But you also have to give him credit. The thing I think he's starting to learn is you don't need to be a hero. You just need to stay in the game.
Yeah.
A lot of his defense last night, his arms were very vertical. He wasn't reaching out. He wasn't even really jumping or moving his feet because he knows you got to let some of them go and live to play another minute.
You know, once you get the ball into the post, defending the post is about denying the guy the ball.
Yeah.
Once he catches it, I'm not going to say it's over, but
the chances of him making the basket
Corrupt dramatically. All, what you need to do is just stand there with your hands in the air. Yeah.
Get your hands
don't
up
foul.
And hope he misses.
Yeah, and you should play. I mean, your number one focus should be denying him the ball to begin with. I mean, that's how you stop the post game.
So Tech is 14-6 now overall, 3-4 in the ACC. We had talked about how getting a top 50 win was really important. I know it was a home top 50 win, but it's a top 50 win nonetheless. How important was this win, not just in terms for the resume, but in terms of getting this team on the right track? You talked about that Florida State game. They felt like they really needed to get things going, or things were kind of tanking. If you looked at the TSL message boards after the Florida State game, fans were not very enthused about the direction of the team. There was a lot of questions about what things were going on. But now it seems like there's definitely some more momentum as they, you know, continue to get through this ACC schedule.
You know, there's a big cement wall between the new Virginia Tech locker room and the hall that's between the locker room and the media room. So there's not a lot of sound gets through there. You could hear the team celebrating in the locker room last night from the media room. So they were fired up last night.
Yeah.
Buzz coached fired up. The team played fired up.
That's as fired up as I've seen Buzz on the sidelines all season.
Buzz has been very subdued the last couple years. The energy that Zach Ledet and Seth Allen brought last year helped the team. It didn't matter. But I think Buzz has told the media before that the way he's coached in the past, there's no way he's going to be able to coach till he's 50 years old if he keeps acting like that his whole career. I think it was a concerted effort on his part to slow down, maybe slow down a little bit so he could extend his career. But I think he's figured out that he has to coach that way with this particular group of guys.
Yeah. He's always made comments. Is this his fourth year now?
That's right.
He has made comments about figuring out what each team needs. Mm-hmm. So I think he's trying to balance his own health and sanity with providing the team what they need.
Correct.
He may have gone a little bit too far last night. It worked, but whew, he was exhausted now, after the game.
Buzz, he said, I'm exhausted, to the media afterwards.
Buzz was catching a little bit of flack for walking onto the floor at that one point.
And he thought it was a TV timeout.
And that wasn't his fault. The ref told him that there was going to be a media timeout after that basket.
Yep.
And then there wasn't. And then, of course, Roy Williams and the staff are wondering what the heck's going on because it's still a live ball. But
So let me go back a little bit. There's always a lot of talk about the resume. But for me, my big takeaway from last night was the process and the formula.
Right.
I think if you concentrate on the process, that the resume will take care of itself. And Buzz talked about after the game, they sat and they just watched a lot of film of their defensive lapses.
After the Florida State game.
Florida State game, yes. Not the UNC game. And, he talks about the energy that they need to bring, all that. I think, basketball season is long, 30, 35 games,
yeah, it is.
Months on end. And I think there's a tendency of fans, and this is understandable because, we as writers and journalists do it too, to take a look and look at what you just saw and think that it's going to stay that way and be that way. And it's not, and another thing he talked about last night was he talked about rebounding. UNC, we've said this in the stuff we've written. UNC was the number one rebounding margin team in the country and one of the top offensive rebounding teams.
Sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Virginia Tech out rebounded them 36-35. But so if you look at the ACC stats, even after this game, UNC is a plus 10.2 and Tech is a minus 5.9 in conference play. And that includes the game they just played.
Yeah.
So that was an outstanding effort by Tech. And Buzz said, I always tell my guys to take up space, but I told them to win the something. Don't just take up space and block out, but go after the ball.
You know?
And he complimented Akil Alexander Walker on that. And they were just a really good strategy, a really good effort last
night. Yeah, I think basketball, I think every team in the ACC has a really good coach. It's rare that you have a game where one ACC coach out-coaches the other, in my opinion. Yeah. It's all about who gets his team ready to play the most, if your shots fall, how well you recruit, blah, blah, blah. I don't think most ACC coaches are going to out-coach. They're going to cancel each other out over the course of 18 games, and it's going to come down to players. And I think what's been disappointing for Virginia Tech this year is it just doesn't seem like this group of guys until last night comprehended how important it is to play defense.
Yeah.
They scored 86 points against Kentucky and lost. They scored 84 points or 86 points against Louisville and lost. They scored 82 points against Florida State and lost because they didn't play defense in any of those games. They didn't play a lick of defense. Last night they played defense and they scored 80 points and they won by 11.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know exactly where I'm going with that, but sometimes you need to see tangible evidence. I think this team kind of fell in love with scoring a lot and really focus a lot on that part of the game. And when you lax off a little bit in a game, their natural inclination is to drop off on defense more so than offense. But I'm a little bit frustrated because I know what Virginia Tech is capable of doing. And I look back at that Kentucky game, and Kentucky's a good team, but
They're not as good as normal.
No, they're not. They've dropped out of the top 25. They're 4-3 in the SEC. They'd be in the bottom of the half of the ACC right now if they were in this league. They've got NBA players, but they don't have that surefire lottery pick that they've had in the past, like Wall or Cousins or anybody like that. I think Virginia Tech, with Kerry Blackshear on the court, not in foul trouble, and a Virginia Tech team that cares about defense, is a better college basketball team this year than Kentucky. But Virginia Tech has not had those two things in every game, particularly their losses. They haven't had a team that's cared about defense. They haven't had Kerry Blackshear out there all the time. When both those things happen, they're very capable, as they showed last night. So what we're going to find out going forward is whether last night was just one little moment in time. Is it going to be like the 2003 Miami football game, a great moment in time,
yeah,
but they didn't capitalize on it and use it to build and move on to bigger things? Is this basketball team going to be able to do that?
I think it's really interesting that you mentioned them falling in love with scoring. I think part of that is the culture that was surrounding that team early on in the season. Mm-hmm. If you go back and look at the social media account for this team, and this may be nitpicking, but bear with me for a second. If you go back and look at their post at the beginning of the season, they were all about how Tech was the number one scoring offense for what a certain period.
Yeah.
And I was too, so I'm not going to fault them.
Okay, but yeah. they were
because there's 351 teams we're talking about.
Yeah, that's
about.
A big that's deal.
Impressive. I know, but they it's almost like they were ignoring their faults,
right?
To only talk about those things, right. And I wonder if that culture didn't start with the social media team or whatever. I wonder if that culture was starting with the team. I wonder if that was permeating from the team to the staff surrounding the team to the staff that does their promotions and all that stuff.
Well, they made the NCAA tournament last year despite being ranked, what, 280th in defensive efficiency?
Yeah.
So they were a darn good team last year without playing a lick of defense all year. And so on paper, I thought this team was going to be better defensively because guess what? They lost their three worst defenders.
And that includes Ty Outlaw, right?
Ty Outlaw is the worst of them all. And then, you know, Lede and Allen. We're not good defenders, to say the least.
The punch in the face moment of the podcast,
right? And don't get me wrong. Every player has his strengths and weaknesses. Well, defense was those guys' weaknesses. Now they were tough kids.
They were good scorers.
They were good scorers. They were good leaders. You know,
not
Seth
defenders.
Allen. Seth Allen was clutch, man. I love those guys, but they weren't great defenders.
They weren't good defenders.
And I thought this team would take a step back offensively, but I thought they'd take a big step forward defensively.
And until the North Carolina game, they hadn't.
Until the North Carolina game, they'd been kind of the same. They'd been marginally better probably defensively, but not enough to make a difference. Meanwhile, you know, even when they were having tough shooting nights offensively, in some of those games they were still scoring over 80 points.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, they'd have a bad three-point shooting game against Florida State. But guess what? They still shot over 50% from the field, scored 82 points. You score 82 points, you should win. You score 86 points at Kentucky, you should win. You score 84, 86 points against Louisville, you should win. There's no reason to not win those games. If you were playing just average defense,
yeah,
you win those games.
So Virginia Tech has Notre Dame left on – or not left, but coming up next on the schedule.
Notre Dame Saturday.
At Notre Dame Saturday, January
27th. 8 o'clock, ESPN2. So no excuse not to watch.
Yes, definitely. And I don't want to dig too deep into that preview because I know that we all haven't done a lot of research into Notre Dame, but without Bonzi Colson on that, without him being healthy, Notre Dame has not been the same team since he went out.
You know how I look at that? I thought Bonzi and Zach Lede kind of canceled each other out.
Bonzi's crazy good.
They're similar, but Bonzi is a more balanced player.
Bonzi's even shorter than Lede. If you think about it, I mean, Bonzi's like 6'4", 6'5".
And he's a center.
I mean, it's crazy. That guy does not look like a college basketball player.
He doesn't look like a good college basketball player.
No, he looks like he should be playing for a low major team.
Yeah,
he looks
not
like
even
a mid-major. He looks like a power forward for UNC Greensboro or Radford or somebody like that.
But instead, he's the center for Notre Dame.
Yeah, he's really,
and he's a darn good player.
He's a really good player. And you know, any team is going to miss a player of his caliber. Now, we'll see. I mean, Mike Bray is an excellent coach. Will they learn how to play throughout the course of the season without him? Or, as Seth Greenberg said, will they play their way out of the NCAA tournament? We'll find out.
Yeah, Seth definitely said that last night. That'll be something to look for.
So one guy has a score to settle is Justin Robinson. He's got a score to settle with Farrell of Notre Dame. What's Farrell's first name? Matt? Mm-hmm. Remember what happened last year?
Is he still playing for him? Or was he?
I think pretty sure he's still playing for them. Okay. Or there's a guy that looks a heck of a lot like him.
Okay.
For
him. I haven't seen him play yet.
That was the one where J. Rob rolled the ball up the floor and Castle.
Yeah, I remember watching that. I believe I covered that game.
Yeah, you did because I was at it. What did Tech end up losing by like 5 or 6 points?
That was a critical.
That was
late in the game.
Tech was going down to try to take the lead. Yeah. And boy, that was the end of that.
Yeah.
All right, so let's move on to the Virginia Tech football schedule, which was announced last week. And again, I'm sorry that we didn't get to this last week, but all the weather down here in the NRV made it a little difficult for all three of us to get here to the magnificent, beautiful studio here in Radford. Let's go ahead and run through the schedule really quickly. We don't have to spend too much time on the specifics of the schedule, but there are some major key themes that I think we need to hit on. So obviously, Monday, September 3rd at Florida State to open the year. That's a primetime slot on ESPN. William & Mary, East Carolina at home, back-to-back weeks. Then they encounter their first back-to-back road trips of the year at ODU and at Duke. Those are both Saturday games. Then they get Notre Dame at home October 6th inside Lane Stadium. And then they go to North Carolina on October 13th. That's also a Saturday. Then they get their bye. And then they hit kind of the meat of their home schedule, really. They go at Georgia Tech on a Thursday night in Lane Stadium, Boston College Saturday in Lane Stadium, at Pittsburgh, Miami at home, and UVA at home to finish the year. And one of the things, Chris, you did a really good job, I think, kind of summing up the big key points from the schedule in a column, which came out right out really after the schedule was released. One of the big takeaways that I have from this is the lack of mileage that Tech is going to have to travel in this game. And Chris, you really pointed this out well in your story.
I've forgotten the numbers.
I have them right here. In 2017, Virginia Tech traveled 5,550 miles.
And that's both ways.
To and back.
To and from.
To their road games. This year, they will travel 3,308. So that's a 2,242 mileage difference.
Yeah.
That's huge.
It's partially because, you know, they're not going to Miami. They're not going to BC, Boston. Yeah. They're not going to Atlanta. Those three trips in 1 year are a lot. And plus, they play seven home games this year. So it's one fewer road trip.
But how much does that really kind of add up and accumulate over
the year? I think the wear and tear. I mean, I flat out say it. The worst game Virginia Tech played this past year was at Georgia Tech. And they look flat.
And it was right after
the Miami game. And
which they already had travel issues coming back.
If you recall, they didn't get home from Miami until past 3 o'clock on Sunday afternoon because they ended up having to land. They had to make a landing in Greensboro, I think, to refuel. And then they ended up landing in Tennessee somewhere and then busing back to Blacksburg.
And that was after trying to land in Roanoke multiple times.
they lost a day of preparation. You're Josh Jackson. You're that point in the season. You've got your fractured foot, you've got your sprained throwing shoulder, you got your sprained throwing elbow, and then you're in the air at 40,000 feet for like 6 hours, flying all over the place,
trying to get a long bus.
Flying is uncomfortable.
It is.
Unless you're flying first class. I mean, you're doing it hurt as a football player. You're a bigger guy than most people. It's just an uncomfortable feeling, and it's a lot of wear and tear, especially after a long trip to Miami, and then you lose a day of prep. And, you know, I don't think it's a coincidence they came out and lost to Georgia Tech the next week.
Well, I was going to say, speaking of the Georgia Tech game, Tech gets a bye before Georgia Tech this year. It's not a full bye because it's a bye and a half because it's a week and a half, really, instead of 2 weeks because it's a Thursday night game. But Tech's lost to Georgia Tech 3 out of the last 4 years.
Yeah, and that has to change if they want to start.
It has to, right?
Yeah, if they want to start consistently winning the Coastal Division again, it has to change because, you know, Miami's good. They're going to be a much more consistent program.
Even if they're not an undefeated team into November like they were this year, they're still going to be really a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah, absolutely. They're a team that can beat Virginia Tech anywhere, whether it's in Miami or in Lane Stadium. So you've got to start beating Georgia Tech because if you lose to Miami and then you lose to Georgia Tech, you're probably done.
Especially if you have a year where, like this year,
right,
you have a Florida State that's also on the schedule.
Right,
I know
exactly.
Florida State has a new coaching staff, and I want to get into that in a minute. But that's another potential loss because that's a tough crossover opponent.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, right now you could lose to Miami and still win the Coastal Division if you beat Georgia Tech and go 7-1 because, you know, Miami could get upset and lose a couple games. That's happened before. In 2005, Miami beat Virginia Tech in Lane Stadium in the biggest game in Lane Stadium history. Virginia Tech still won the Coastal Division because that was the only game they lost all year, and Miami lost to Georgia Tech on the last weekend, I believe, of the regular season, or next to last weekend, and Virginia Tech went on to the ACC championship game. But you got to start beating Georgia Tech again.
Will, how much are you not looking forward to that opener at Florida State?
Yeah, you know, Tech fans aren't going to like this, but I'm going to pick the Hokies to lose that one. You know, FSU's just got a ton of talent. They'll have Francois back. This thing's on the road. I mean, I see a lot of talk on our boards. Tech can win that one. Tech can win that one. And
I mean, they can.
Sure, they can. But you know, everybody talks about how bad Florida State was this year. Well, they mailed it in.
Yeah,
you know, they didn't. They didn't play anywhere after they came.
They gave up on that coaching staff, and I think that's one of the reasons that Jimbo Fisher's now coaching.
If you listen to Bud Elliott, who covers Florida State, who I think seems to be their most knowledgeable beat writer type.
Yeah, he's pretty sharp.
Yeah, he has flat out said that the players quit on Jimbo, and a lot of them were going to transfer if Jimbo had come back as head coach.
Yeah.
So they went through this whole season playing for a guy that they didn't want to play for.
So
they want to play for Willie Taggart. And the problem is, so you're going to see a bunch of Florida State guys that you've never seen on film in a new offense.
Yeah.
Or in Taggart's offense, at least. They're going to have their quarterback back. And, you know, Florida State has more talent. And in general, you're not going to beat a more talented team that's on the road. I mean, coaching only takes you so far.
Yeah.
This is not at noon on a Saturday. This is 8 o'clock at night.
Monday night primetime game. Exactly. You're not going to catch Florida State napping or anything like that. Virginia Tech's going to go into the game
that
ranked.
Florida State's going to be busy.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Florida State's going to take the game seriously.
They're going to be out to prove a point.
Right. Yeah, because everybody questioned them this year. As they should.
Yeah.
People question their manhood. They question their dedication, and they questioned everything about their entire program. And you know, if Willie Taggart's smart, he's going to point that out to them the entire offseason.
Yeah. So my biggest thing I wanted to say about the schedule, it's a couple things. Number one, as we wrote and said, it's hard to imagine the schedule being laid out better than it is for Virginia Tech. Miami has to travel to Georgia Tech the Saturday before they have to travel to Virginia Tech. So the ACC did the Hokies a favor there.
So Miami has back-to-back trips to Atlanta and Blacksburg.
Yeah. So it's kind of like it's opposite of last year.
It's tough. Yep. So, and the other thing, not that this matters a lot when you've won 14 in a row, but UVA has to, I believe, travel to Georgia Tech the Saturday before they travel to Virginia Tech on a Friday.
Yeah.
So I can hear it next year when the 2019 schedule comes out next year. There are going to be some things we don't like about it, and you're going to hear people say on the message boards, "Man, the ACC always screws Tech over."
Nah,
and I'm going to post ahem and link to the 2018 schedule.
Yeah, the only thing you can really complain about is the two trap games. All right, you've got Pitt, and I forget Pitt's a trap game, and who's the other trap game? Duke. And I don't remember where they lay out on the schedule. It's been so long. Week has been so long since I've written
the article. So Tech is at ODU, at Duke, and then home against Notre Dame.
Right. So they've got at Duke the week before they play Notre Dame, and then they're, I guess,
Pittsburgh is in between Boston College and Miami.
At Pitt the week before they play Miami. So those are your two trap games. But, I mean, every team schedule has a trap game, per se.
Yeah, yeah. You can find a trap game in every schedule for every Power 5 team.
And you can nitpick and say Carolina has 16 days to prepare. You could give Carolina 16 weeks to prepare, and I don't think they'd beat Virginia Tech this year.
And it's at North Carolina.
I don't care that it's at North Carolina. It's going to be half full of Tech fans.
Yeah.
So I just think I think it sets up pretty well. I don't think Tech's going to win that first week. I don't like playing a game like that in week one, unless you win it. If you win it, it's great. But if not, it's just you start out the season with people questioning things. They question recruiting. They question coaching. They question everything about the entire team.
If Tech wins that game, that will really make the next four weeks, because you have William & Mary, ECU, ODU, and Duke. That'll make the next 4 weeks hype central.
Oh, you're going undefeated going into
Notre Dame.
Well, possibly. You're going in, assuming you get past the Duke trap game.
Yeah.
But yes, there's a good possibility you're going unbeaten into that Notre Dame game, which sets up, a top 10 Virginia Tech team against what could be a top 10 Notre Dame team. Then you're talking game day in Lane Stadium again, this time for Notre Dame.
Well, I'm happy you mentioned game day, because another note I had on here, Tech already has a couple guaranteed primetime games this year. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the Florida State game. We're pretty sure the UVA game is going to be a primetime game.
That's
a Black Friday game. Georgia Tech. There's a chance Tech has 5 primetime games this year, 4 of which are at home.
Right.
When was the last time Tech had that many night games in Lane Stadium, or just played that many night games in general?
Yeah, that's a really good question.
Now, see, if you'd asked us this yesterday in preparation for the podcast, Chris could have wowed fans.
I am really good at asking questions with no preparation.
I guess the last time Virginia Tech played a 7 or 8 o'clock game, Saturday night game, was Clemson this year. But before that, maybe you've got to go all the way back to North Carolina in 2005.
Yeah, because
they played Clemson at 6 o'clock, I think, on ESPN2 in 2011.
Correct.
The NC State game was a Friday night game.
It was a Friday
And then
night
the Ohio State game was a Monday.
Yeah, we're talking pure Saturday games.
Yeah,
here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Tech's going to open the year at FSU. That's prime time. Notre Dame at home. I'm not sure how the TV contracts are going to work with that, because I know that
When Notre Dame plays on the road, it's always the home team's TV contract.
Okay,
that game will not be on NBC.
Okay, so there you go. That's a great chance that Tech – or not a great chance, but there's a chance that that's a primetime game of both of those teams. get off to good starts. Georgia Tech guaranteed. Miami in Lane Stadium. If Tech,
yeah,
if Tech is able to go into that game with one loss, and Miami goes into that game with zero or one losses,
yeah, I mean,
hey, now wait a minute. That weekend that Tech and Miami play each other, isn't that the weekend where the SEC teams play all their FCS opponents?
That is correct. Because Auburn and Alabama will be playing your Jacksonville States to give each other an extra week
playing
to prepare.
Wofford.
So that's going to remove a lot of competition for a primetime slot.
That's right.
And then you have UVA to finish the year. So I'm not going to assume that all five of these are going to be primetime. Obviously, a couple of them are guaranteed, but there's a chance it could be all of these could be primetime games.
Yeah, it's a chance, you know, depending on how the teams
And that's a great chance for Virginia Tech, too. I know that they're losing a lot of pieces coming into this season, but there's a chance for Virginia Tech to really make multiple statements on national television, something that this program hasn't done since when?
Since a
2014 Ohio State?
Right.
And even then, the season didn't go all that great.
Yeah, sure, exactly. Yeah. I think beating West Virginia this past year.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's the first time Virginia Tech has ever won one of those early season big non-conference games.
First time they've won in FedEx, right?
Yeah, I guess that's right.
And that gave them a nice tailwind for the season. Absolutely. You know, it made a couple other things possible.
Yeah, it made the Clemson game possible, made the Miami game possible.
And if Tech beats Florida State, it would have the same type of effect, except it would be even bigger because it would be an ACC win.
Exactly, yeah. Well, that and Florida State presumably will be ranked top 15 next year.
Tech would be 1-0. And Miami would still have to play Florida State and come to Blacksburg and go to Georgia Tech.
Yeah,
so it would give Virginia Tech
a leg up.
A huge leg up.
Yeah.
I mean, Virginia Tech would be the odds-on favorite to win the Coastal Division if they beat Florida State that open.
The one thing about that Florida State game is that, I know that you're going to have to face Willie Taggart's offense with no film with those players in that offense.
And with but no Tremaine Edmonds and Tim Settles.
Yes, but you're also going to catch them with no prep. Yeah. I mean, they're not going to have a chance to work out the kinks.
You're right, and I'll say this: Virginia Tech's coaching has been outstanding in the month of September the last 2 years, because teams don't really have film on Tech either. You saw how good Tech's offense was against West Virginia this year. You saw how good their offense was against Tennessee last year when they weren't dropping the ball. They were going up and down on Tennessee's
14
defense.
14-0 in the first quarter.
Yeah, like Tennessee wasn't even there.
Yeah,
so. Yeah, I think Tech's coaching has been awesome to start each of the last two seasons. So you've got to take that into account as well. Although Florida State, you're going up from a talent level quite a bit there.
Definitely. I think that's about all we can say on this schedule. Before we wrap up the podcast, I do want to hit on the two interviews that I was able to do with Tim Settle and Wyatt Teller. Went down to Atlanta, caught up with those guys, spent the day with them, watched them work out. They're preparing for the NFL draft down there at the Chip Smith Performance Center in Atlanta, Georgia. And I know you guys have both read the stories. They're for subscribers only. If you're a subscriber, you're listening to the podcast, you haven't read either of those stories, go read them now. You need to do that. They're great pieces of content, I think, not to toot my own horn. On Wednesday, we're going to have another piece that'll be a free piece of content that's going to talk about their pre-draft process. But these two stories right here, I want to get into them. Let's start with Timmy. Tim's decision to go pro was criticized by fans. It was criticized by media members, including us. I think we need to be honest about that. But I think after going through and reading, or not for me, going through and talking to Tim, listening to him describe it, I at least understand the decision process now, even if you may take all those factors and come to a different conclusion.
You know, Tim flat out said in the interview that his goal the whole time was to be 3-and-done.
Yeah. He was very open and honest about that.
So, barring a bad injury or a bad season, he was going to go pro. And it doesn't matter to him what round he's projected to be drafted in. As far as he's concerned, he's an NFL player, and it doesn't matter if he's taken in the first round or the fifth round, he's going to the NFL.
Yeah.
There was never really any talking Tim Settle out of going to the NFL draft. That's what I took out of
it. And that's something that Tech tried to do. The Tech coaching staff tried to convince Tim to come back. I know that Fuente says publicly that he wants to provide information to these guys, but if you think he's not trying to get these guys to come back, you're kidding yourself, because of course Justin Fuente wants Tim Settle starting at defensive tackle against Florida State next to Ricky Walker. But Will, what were some of the takeaways from the Tim Settle piece that really stood out to you?
One of the things that got said about the early departures, in a general sense, not necessarily Virginia Tech, but in a general sense, was, and I think we said it, Chris may have said it, and I don't disagree with him, is that these kids, from the time they're recruits, get a lot of smoke blown up their butts on Twitter.
For
sure. The social media thing where they get all the love on Instagram and Twitter and probably on Snapchat. I don't know how much they put themselves out there on Snapchat, but
depends on who you are. I know Tim Settle's very active on his Snapchat.
Yeah. they get a lot of love, they get a lot of sunshine blown up their hineys, and that makes them think they're better than they are. That is not the case with Tim. If you read your interview with him, Tim, it's actually the opposite with Tim. I've had people doubting me my whole life. They doubted I would qualify academically coming out of high school. They doubted I could lose the weight at Virginia Tech. They doubted I could put up these kind of numbers. So his attitude is actually the opposite.
Yeah.
I'm used to people doubting me and criticizing me, and I've always been able to prove them wrong, and I'm out to prove you wrong again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not, I'm the greatest, of course I'm awesome, you know.
Yeah.
That's not his mindset at all. So I thought that was interesting.
I'm glad he's taking those things and using them as kind of a chip. I do think he misconstrues criticism as, oh, you're not supporting me.
I think that word hate, the haters.
Right. I think he made the wrong decision. And I don't think he made the wrong decision because I don't think he's an NFL player. I think he will make the NFL. And I think he will have an NFL career. I think he could have made at least a couple million more dollars if he had stayed it for another year.
Yeah.
So that's where I think he's making the wrong decision.
Yeah.
And he's talking about maximizing earnings by going in a year early. But, you know, he can maximize earnings more so. I mean, most guys don't have a 9 or 10 year NFL career these days.
Yeah.
You're a year quicker to your second contract, I guess, so to speak.
Yeah.
But if you even make it, most guys don't even make it to their second contract, to be quite honest. I mean, you need to be thinking about your first contract and how much you make on your first contract, because you never know whether there's going to be a second one or not.
Yeah.
And I think he's leaving a couple million on the table.
See, there you go. Doubting Tim Settle.
Now, if Tim Settle's drafted in the first couple rounds, then that's fine. Then I think it will have been worth it. Now, we'll just have to see if that happens. Now, I support Tim 100%. I mean, I hope Tim does great, because I've always thought Tim was a great guy.
Well, yeah, let me jump in here and say we've all interviewed Tim.
He's great.
Yeah.
I mean, I've written numerous times how much I admire Tim for overcoming the academic difficulties, overcoming the weight loss issues. I'm not doubting Tim Settle's determination. I have no doubt that he's going to make the NFL. I just think he's costing himself money.
There are any rational Virginia Tech fan or just decent human being would wish Tim success in the NFL. Unfortunately, you do have that section of every single fan base that wishes ill will on these guys because they left the team. That we saw this with Jerod Evans last year, how there was a small segment of the fan base that got really nasty towards Jerod, told Jerod that he was going to be no good, that he was terrible, he wasn't as good as he thought he was, and they hope he sucked in the NFL.
Yeah.
And obviously he's not on a roster right now, but you know, I do think that some players do kind of misconstrue, you know, people saying that, I think you would have benefited from another year, but I still hope you have a great career. Thanks for everything.
I think I don't agree with doing that, no matter who it is. There's no way I could do that. I could see anybody doing that to Tim Settle, or at least I could never understand someone doing it.
Yeah, because it's not rational. It's not rational. Yeah,
right, and Tim's a state of Virginia guy. He loves Virginia Tech.
He was a mid-4-star kid with offers from every single school. Now, granted, and he talked about this, how some schools backed off because of his academic issues.
Mm-hmm.
But he had offers from just about everywhere.
Yeah, he could have gone to Georgia or somewhere like that if he wanted.
Washington State was on the list.
Jerod was here for 1 year. Jerod went to 3 different colleges in 4 years. Jerod's a mercenary. Jerod is not one of those guys who's going to come back after 5 years just to go to a Tech game because he loves Virginia Tech. That Jerod doesn't strike me as that type. So I can see people not feeling that closeness with Jerod, and then after he bounces after the year, that where they're just like, man, you didn't care anything about Virginia Tech. This was just your meal ticket, or what you thought was your meal ticket. Turns out it was not your meal ticket at all. So I could see people getting a little riled up about Jerod. There was never
any sort of bond formed with Jerod.
There was never any sort of bond.
Well, it's hard to do that when you have a guy that leaves after 1 year, and that's an issue with college basketball.
I'll admit, I was mad at Jerod. And I didn't get on his Twitter and stalk him and tell him he was a moron or anything like that, like some of these crazy people do. But I was mad at him. I thought he was hurting himself, and I thought he was hurting Virginia Tech. And, you know, and Settle's hurting Virginia Tech by leaving, but I'm not mad at him at all because, I mean, he's going to go to the NFL. I'm convinced he's an NFL player. I never thought Gerard was an NFL player.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody did. Nobody did who knows anything about the NFL.
But that being said, you didn't wish ill will on Gerard.
Well, of course not.
Because you're a rational, rational
but
person.
But what I'm saying is it's easier to, quote, wish ill will on somebody that you feel no connection with at all.
Now, he's not justifying the behavior,
let's be clear. I'm not justifying the behavior at all. But, you know, Gerard was a mercenary. And that's the thing. Well, these guys are going to go into the NFL. They have to be ready for that.
Yeah, because the NFL is, you know, they're all mercenaries.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's just what the NFL is. So if you can't take that at this level, then maybe you shouldn't be in the NFL at all.
But Bud Foster always says the NFL stands for not for long.
Yeah.
And that's exactly true. The Wyatt Teller piece, I think, was really interesting to me because Wyatt has never really been doubted as much as Tim Settle was, but that doesn't mean that Wyatt hasn't had things to overcome. He's had to overcome a position change. He played for two different head coaches. He played for three different position coaches. And he dealt with two strength coaches, one of which those strength coaches he was extremely close to, Mike Gentry. And he was able to fight through all of that. He got benched as an upperclassman, multi-year starter, redshirt junior. And he was still able to finish his Tech career strong and on a good note. And I think that he'll be viewed favorably, you know, 5 years from now.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I think when you look at Wyatt Teller, he looks like somebody who plays for Alabama or Florida State or USC or somebody like that. You know, when he
the hair.
Yeah. Right.
That's USC
That is USC, if you think about it. But I remember when he was being recruited, and I thought he was the best offensive lineman I had seen that Virginia Tech had been recruiting ever since I'd been covering Virginia Tech.
And except Tech wasn't even recruiting him as a DL.
Technically weren't even recruiting him as an offensive lineman. So I've always loved Wyatt. I think he's the most physically dominant offensive lineman when he's on that Virginia Tech's ever had. I mean, Jake Grove was a great player. Jim Pine was a great player. Dwayne Brown was a great player. But when Wyatt Teller got his hands on somebody at the line of scrimmage, I don't care who you are, it's over. And
he actually talked about that in the interview, the hard part for him was always getting his hands on somebody.
Yeah. Don't sell Jim Pine short, man. He wasn't nearly as big as Wyatt.
Okay, yeah, see, I was 10 when he graduated, so you might have to.
So I will tell a story. In 1993, when Tech went to that first Independence Bowl, they clinched that bowl bid by beating Syracuse 45-23 in Lane Stadium. And that game was out of hand by the early fourth quarter. I knew Tech was going to win. So I specifically, for the first time of the year, watched Jim Pine block. And he was nasty. He would get his hands up underneath the jersey of the opposing defensive lineman or linebacker and just drive him 5 or 10 yards backwards. Now, he was only – I know when he came to Tech, he was only 250.
He started as a true freshman at center at Virginia Tech at 250 pounds, which should show you how much the game has changed in the last 25 years.
If he had Wyatt Teller's physique,
yes,
holy
that's what
cow.
I mean.
Because he was nasty.
Yeah.
One of the interesting things about Wyatt's story, too, was his recruitment and how really UVA and Tech were his top two options and how he almost had to be kind of convinced that Tech was a better option. And once he kind of, quote-unquote, saw the light, he kind of saw some of the issues that UVA is still facing on the recruiting trail in terms of their culture and their atmosphere towards the football program. And I liked how he talked about how important James Gale was in his recruitment, a guy who, obviously played at Tech for 4 years, was a 3-year starter, a player that most Tech fans will remember from that time period. And he talked about how important James Gale was in getting him in Blacksburg.
Yeah, and, you know, I was actually at that camp, and I heard Wyatt Teller was talking to other recruits, and he was telling them how much he loved Mike London, and, you know, Mike London was a cop, and blah, blah, blah. You know, Tech fans have all heard
that
story.
Did you know Mike London was a cop?
Yeah, did you hear that? But at any rate, man, I'm like, oh, you got to be kidding me. Because already Wyatt Teller was, like, my favorite recruit ever, because I thought he was a dominant player, and he was exactly what the program needed.
He was 6'5", 260, 270.
He was just physically dominant if you watch him on film, which you need to do. I don't think you have yet.
I've not seen Wyatt Teller high school film.
It's awesome. But at any rate, I was losing my mind at that camp. I was like, this guy's going to UVA, and they're going to fail as a program because Mike Lund is not a good coach, and Wyatt Teller's going to waste his career. So I was freaking out. And finally, Gale comes over there and starts talking to him, and Gale was basically his host that whole visit, and it was after that visit that things changed. He went from the perceived UVA lean, which I think he was at the time, to a Virginia Tech lean. And by the end of his recruitment, I don't think it was all that close. And I think it was James Gale that day who got that process started.
Wyatt talked about how he took I think he remembers 7 unofficials to UVA and 3 to Tech.
Yeah,
just because
right.
UVA was less than an hour away. He said he could hop right on 29 and go into Charlottesville, and boom, he was there. He could spend the day there. But I thought the really funny thing was he talked about was that just about everywhere he had an offer from, he could hunt and fish.
Yeah, well,
he could hunt and fish from just about anywhere.
I actually had a friend a few years ago who went to high school with Wyatt, and I'm not going to say the guy's name or anything like that, but he said, I told Wyatt one day, Wyatt, why would you go to UVA? You like four-wheeling, and you like hunting, you like fishing, you like dipping. You go to UVA and you do that stuff, they'll make fun of you.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. And he actually talked about how UVA, at least in Wyatt's kind of perspective, they don't appreciate the football team as much as Tech does. Mm-hmm. Tech almost worships these guys. The students love the football team. The students love the athletes, and they love going to the games, and they do anything they can to make the football players happy because that's just kind of what Tech is. But he talked about how UVA, they kind of looked down on the football guys. They told them they shouldn't be there, that they weren't smart enough to be there.
I can certainly see some people who go to UVA just for the academics, and it's got so much academic prestige. I can see a lot of the students there looking down their noses at the football players because a lot of those guys could not get into school there if they weren't football players. I could definitely see that happening at UVA. And I'd never really thought about that before until Wyatt brought that up.
Yeah. So how will you guys really remember Wyatt?
Oh, is the most physically dominant offensive lineman that I've seen at Virginia Tech. Like I said, Jim Pine, I was 10 years old when he graduated, so I can't really comment too much on that. But I think as far as pure physical dominance, I don't think there's been a better offensive lineman at Virginia Tech that I have seen personally.
I think, what class did Wyatt sign in?
That would have been the 2013.
2013. I think as the program under Frank Beamer started to, as the aggregate talent level started to drop and the records started to go from 10 wins to 7 wins, there were a few recruits who kept it from being worse.
And he was one of them?
Wyatt was one of those guys. Yeah. Isaiah Ford was one of those
Cam
guys.
Phillips.
You know, if you spend some time and really think, even as you know, and I know nobody over in Blacksburg wants to hear this. Some Tech fans don't want to hear it, but the talent level dropped.
Yeah.
And, we've done many articles and a lot of analysis.
That's an objective fact.
There were some guys that became more critical than ever that they get him, and he was probably one of those guys.
Yeah.
So he was just – the thing about Wyatt is he could have been so much fun behind a microphone, but they just – he got to do some interviews, but
and
not
then every
a lot.
Time he did, he would say something that he was a little too honest. And then, Wyatt has never been a BS guy.
Right.
Wyatt's never going to BS you about anything.
Yeah.
And in today's modern age of PR and public
controlling
and making sure that you control the message and keep unsavory things from getting out there. Nobody knows wants to know what the sausage, how the sausage is made. They just want to eat it. Wyatt was kind of taken away from the microphone because Wyatt did have a propensity to talk, and Wyatt loved to talk, and he loved to just blab about anything because Wyatt's a very open guy. And that was one of the things that I kind of wish we had been able to do more of, is talking to Wyatt, whether it be at a press conference or whether it be in a breakout interview. Either one, Wyatt was pretty good at.
Yeah.
And if you had a team full of Wyatt Tellers, you'd have a legit college football playoff contender.
A guy like Wyatt, honestly, I don't mean this to say that I don't mean Tech football is boring, because it's not. It's more exciting now than it was a few years ago.
Oh, yeah.
But there's less access into the program. It almost feels like the program has less character to it, because all you see is what the PR department puts there in front of you.
Yeah.
Because there are no more open scrimmages. You know, there's no more BeamerBall.com. You know, even their interviews in front of the media, they put them up there on a podium, and it's almost like they're scripted.
Tim Settle was actually one of the best ones at the podium.
Right, right, exactly.
So are we going to hear Oscar Bradburn again? You know, because he was a lot of fun.
You know, it's actually funny.
So the last time they put him up there, what did he say?
Rubber.
No, that was preseason. Are we talking about Wyatt or Oscar? That was preseason.
Yeah.
During the season, he said he was going to light somebody's ass up or something like that.
Yeah, he said he was going to take care of somebody.
Now, see, that's awesome. That adds color to your football. That makes me feel closer to the team. When you put a guy like Wyatt or Oscar Bradburn or Settle or people like that. Reggie Floyd, I thought, was really good.
Reggie Floyd is pretty good at the podium.
When you put guys out, it makes it feel more human.
Yeah.
Some people they put up there, some of their more experienced interviewers that they want to put up there no matter what, they're just trained to talk like robots, and it's just like,
boring.
I'm losing interest. Just get me to Saturday, win the game.
Cam Phillips was another guy who was pretty good.
He was a good interview too.
That's true.
Right.
He's also a flashy dresser.
He is a flashy dresser. So I think people like Wyatt Teller in this day and age of PR, I think, add a little character, a little humanness, if you will, to your football,
and that's part of the reason why he was a fan favorite,
right?
Because people were able to relate to Wyatt because Wyatt was, you know, a little rugged around the edges, and he was a guy who, you know,
can you imagine if Corey Moore was on the team right now day and age? Remember when
we would never talk to Corey Moore ever.
Remember when he went down to the Sugar Bowl and told the BD to shut the F up? I mean, can you imagine if that happened today? Oh man, that would embarrass some people.
But it'd be absolutely hilarious.
Right, right. It's not like he's out there hurting anybody, doing any bad things off the field. He adds color. He adds life to your program. They would put Corey Moore in a box these days and never let him talk to the media. Oh man!
As a media member, I wouldn't appreciate him telling me to shut the f up, but I did appreciate. I've seen video of Corey Moore's interviews.
It's on YouTube.
Yeah,
it would be a tragedy if a guy like Corey Moore came through today's world and was just boxed up in a corner and never put into public light.
We're just going to go out there to tear a dome and work hard and just try to get better.
Just playing tough, and we just got to execute better. Yeah.
Hey man, Clemson.
How you doing, Randy?
Clemson. All right, folks, that's all the time we have for this podcast. Remember, if you haven't gone and read the Wyatt Teller and Tim Settle stories, if you're a subscriber, go read those now. Those are available to TSL Pass subscribers only. Again, Virginia Tech men's basketball at Notre Dame, Saturday, January 27th, 8 p.m. on ESPN2, so there's no excuse for you to miss that game. And make sure you follow along with TSL. We'll have coverage of the basketball team and continuing coverage of the football team as we work through this offseason and the recruiting. Signing day is coming up in, I guess, what? It's not long from now. A couple recruits close that we're still waiting on to sign. Dax Hollyfield, Javante Jean-Baptiste, Anthony Grant's another one that we're still waiting on. So we'll see how that wraps up. But until next week, for Will Stewart, for Chris Coleman, I'm Ricky the Blue. Thanks for listening.